Gate Computer Technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Morning, you're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. On today's show, we are going to talk about where you should be buying hardware so that the hardware that you buy doesn't have malware on it when you get it. That's interesting, because that's actually a legitimate problem that people have to avoid. QuickTime is no longer supported. What does that mean? An update on a number of ransomware topics as well as ransomware mitigation topics. And things about application control associated with Tor. And then an update on those of you have upgraded to Windows 10, you might be interested in some additional tidbits on that. So let's get started. First of all, I highly suggest that you only buy technology hardware from valid distribution partners. So let's consider a topic such as you're looking for surveillance cameras. And so do you go to, Sam's Club, let's say, and buy a set of cameras that were made in China? Well, I would hope that you wouldn't do that. And the reason I say that is because there has been an absolute plethora of cases where individuals have purchased that sort of equipment, and it's just, maybe it doesn't have malware in it, but it's so poorly coded from a security perspective that it's really easy to break into. So do you remember all of the cases of these little children or baby cams and remote baby cams and stuff like that that were effectively hacked into and used to spy on the residents of the facilities? Yeah, well, that's kind of what you end up with when you're buying that type of cheap hardware, is you can pretty much be assured that you are not getting equipment that is fully compliant with IP networking standards and security best practices. Okay, so just be aware that it's really not cheap. It looks cheap, but it's really not cheap. Not if it ends up compromising your network and your privacy and your security. Okay. So there is a very interesting article published by security researcher Mike Olson, where he and some of his friends had purchased a Sony surveillance camera off of Amazon. And the purchase was not made from a well-known distributor. Now, it is, I don't know a lot about Sony's distribution network, but I have been an Axis surveillance provider for 16 years. And so I can tell you that Axis, like most vendors, they have distribution partners. And if you are buying equipment from someone other than somebody who is an actual valid service partner associated with one of the approved distribution partners, then the equipment that you're getting is suspect. You really just don't know. So as an example, if you wanted Axis surveillance cameras, you would give me a call. And I only source my equipment from one of Axis's approved distribution partners for the United States. And that's really, really important. I don't mess around with that type of stuff because, if you're doing things correctly, you can still get the best prices through distribution. And in addition to that, what's really important is that you're getting the right equipment that is new, that has valid warranty on it, and that you're going to be able to have support through distribution for that product, and that nobody's tampered with it and, messed with it. Well, so a security researcher Mike Olson found when he hooked up this Sony surveillance camera that the website looked a little different than what he was normally used to seeing on a Sony surveillance camera. So he was a little suspicious about that, and he thought, maybe it's just some poor website programming, because all of these devices have a web management interface, just like your wireless router at home. So he gets into the code of the web page and he ends up finding that there is a section of the web page that is phoning home to a malicious website, and it is literally using that phone home to load malicious content through that website and have an attempt to use a browser exploit to then compromise the computer. So he certainly wasn't making some adverse statement against Sony surveillance cameras, though I don't personally choose to use them. He was really making a statement about you need to be very careful about where you're sourcing this stuff from. And I guess he and his friends thought they were getting a deal by sourcing it through Amazon. Well, they certainly got more than they bargained for. So I'm going to post that article for you so you can check that out if you want. And this is, it's kind of an interesting side topic, but very related. Mike Adams is a well-known health researcher, and the man's really, truly brilliant. And he's doing just absolutely groundbreaking, innovative work with regards to the contents of food and supplements and healthcare products and even dog food. I mean, you know, the whole nine yards. What he's got going on is amazing. You can just look him up at, you can search for Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and you will no doubt find his websites. He has many. Well, he's done a number of posts on fake supplements being sold on Amazon. So this is an extension topic. Again, I don't have anything against Amazon. I buy stuff from Amazon. The issue is who is the reseller that you're actually buying from? Because it's not a product from Amazon. Even if it says, you know, shipped from or shipped by and sold by shipped from and sold by Amazon or something like that, it may actually be a product that Amazon is not actually buying straight up from distribution. It may actually be a product that they have a reseller who is using their site as a shopping cart, and then they're paying, that reseller is actually paying Amazon for the warehousing and distribution of that product. So what Mike Adams found was that supplements, there's bad people out there that are taking valid bottles, so really nice looking bottles. I mean, that you couldn't tell the difference between a bottle of let's say Enzymedica Repair Gold that actually came from Enzymedica, versus something that had been manufactured by a knockoff artist. And there is, of course, danger associated with ingesting things that are not exactly what they are listed as being. So when I get my supplements, I get them from very well-known distributors, not off of Amazon. And Mike Adams did some pretty interesting analysis on this, and he found that Amazon really just doesn't have a good mechanism in place to vet these resellers. And so for things that are as important as your food or your security or your supplements, you know, frankly, anything that you're going to ingest, well, then maybe you really ought to be getting it from another supplier. And I've actually run into circumstances where Amazon is, they're not the cheapest. And if you actually have a returns issue, you might have more of a returns issue by buying it through Amazon. It is not, again, it's not something against Amazon. It has to do with now you're going through Amazon to get to some other small reseller when instead you could have bought the product through a larger, you know, official distribution channel. And I'd say in the majority of time, you're not going to get the best prices in those contexts when you go through Amazon. So that's I thought that was just fascinating because it really just rocked home on a number of a number of angles on the same topic. So just beware of where you're buying stuff from so that they're not fake products. Okay, let's move on to QuickTime. It turns out that Apple really has not done a good job of communicating out the fact that they will no longer be releasing patches for QuickTime. They have said, as of the 14th of this month, that they are deprecating support for the application, will no longer patch security flaws. Now, there's actually two flaws that are heap corruption-based remote code execution vulnerabilities that are currently in the existing software. And since Apple has no intention of patching that software, then what you need to do is make sure that's not on your systems. Now, for all of my clients whose systems I do patch management services for, that stuff, that QuickTime, was literally uninstalled from their systems the same day that I found out about the fact that it wasn't going to be patched software anymore. So that's the kind of fast turnaround that you can expect from, somebody who's very serious about security with endpoint management, which is not always the case. In a lot of circumstances, managed service providers who are doing patch management services are just, not quite that vigilant. And that's because they're, I find oftentimes they're organizations who are somewhat the technicians who are doing the patch management services, they're not security people. So their priority that is told to them from their management is, don't do anything that's ever going to cause the customer to call and to think that there's an issue, because that costs money to respond to their calls. Well, my approach is pretty significantly different. My approach is, no, you're paying me to manage your system for the purpose of keeping it secure, so I'm going to use my best judgment, and if that best judgment says that patch needs to be installed today, or that application needs to be uninstalled today, then it's going to get uninstalled or patched today. Because the name of the game is to mitigate the security risk. So therefore, you have to be vigilant and responsive. You can't be waiting until the next convenient patch cycle. There are times that, depending upon what the server is, I'll go in and I'll patch a server in the middle of the day and reboot it, because maybe that is possible to do with it. So there's a lot of servers nowadays that you can reboot them and they'll be rebooted in less than 3 minutes because they're virtual machines. A physical server is going to take longer to reboot. And the newer hardware is just super fast anyways, especially if you put applications on it like Conducive Disk Keeper that maintains the hard drive speed. So if you're interested in this link to this article, it talks about how you need to uninstall QuickTime because Apple is not patching it. I will be posting that link. Let's talk about additional notes on this whole ransomware topic that you need to know about. I've recently been to a number of consulting firm conferences, and I'm hearing a lot from other consulting firms where their customers are getting ransomware. And, none of my clients are getting ransomware. So, they're talking to me about, what are you doing and so forth. And, my response is the same thing as you all have heard from me on this show many, many times, which is I believe very strongly in defense in depth and the full cybersecurity kill chain. I try to adhere to the NIST 800 standards and ISO 27001 where possible. And it's interesting because if you take that approach, well, suddenly you now have PCI compliance and HIPAA compliance and Sarbanes-Oxley and GLBA. The whole rest of it really falls into place. And all of these data breaches, of course, ransomware is significantly correlated with data breaches. And because think about it from the perspective that the bad guys now have access to the system to such a degree that they can do the ransomware, and the ransomware is a command and control device, it will actually exfiltrate data. This isn't just about encrypting files and holding them hostage. In many cases, the ransomware is exfiltrating a full copy of your data to their server before it actually encrypts it on your system. So it's a data exfiltration problem, which translates to, oh, you've been breached. Well, when we look at countries like Germany, you really don't see breaches happening in Germany. And I think that's interesting, and I looked into that and found out that in Germany, there are governmental regulations that require businesses to have regularized security audit certifications performed by data security architects. And if your business does not have a current certification, so it's not, you know, gone through an audit and a certification process by an accredited data security architect, well, then they're probably going to shut you down. And I don't really have a problem with that. And that's interesting because in general, I have a pretty libertarian view of things. Like, I mean, I'm pretty much laissez-faire. I don't think that excessive government regulation is the way to go. But I'm not going to call it ubiquitous, but there is a pervasive problem that I see in anything other than exceptionally large enterprise. And you know what, you can't even make grand statements like that either, because I mean, what is Target as an example? What about Home Depot, TJ Maxx? These are all organizations that have been breached repeatedly. So those organizations at least have the resources. They really don't have any excuses to make for closing those security gaps. But what I see pretty substantially in the small to mid-market is that there is a minority of businesses that are really taking security seriously. The majority of them know that there are really and truly no financial adverse impacts to them for being breached. And I find that to be really significantly unfortunate. I heard recently that some of the new positions that are being hired for in the federal government are compliance officers. And I find this interesting because if you roll back the clock to like the year 2001 or so, there was this big push to free up money for fighting foreign wars, and some of that money came from liquidating governmental positions that were regulatory auditors. And, well, certainly diminishing the number of regulatory auditors certainly didn't help abate the 2008 financial crisis, now did it? When I tell you that I think that some additional governmental enforcement, you know, the regulations are not completely there, but, you know, there's something there. But there isn't even enforcement for the existing regs. So if there's no enforcement and the small to mid-market businesses know that there's no enforcement because there's nobody auditing, and, you know, it's not like your IT consultant's going to turn you in. Then nobody does anything. I'm not going to say nobody does everything, but a significant portion of businesses do not do what is adequately required to even protect their payroll data. And that is the kind of stuff that I find just so frustrating. Because, you know, really to do IT standards and best practices is not an astronomical sum of money. You know, it's an elephant. Yes, you can eat it one little bite at a time, and you can consistently be making progress towards, you know, closing those security gaps in your strategy. And you should do that. But as it is, I mean, I remember back in 2009 when the revised HIPAA regs came out, I was hearing from a number of doctors that they didn't really care about security because they were small. And no regulator was ever going to come, and even if they were breached, nobody was going to find out. And right here in Racine, there was a dental office that had all of their computer equipment stolen, their backups were stolen, their backups were on tape, and their server was stolen. So I can pretty well guarantee you that that server was not encrypted. And, I mean, I have no idea if the backup tapes were encrypted or anything else like that, but suffice to say that I can pretty well guarantee you all of those patient records were compromised. Now, whether or not the bad guys who stole the computer equipment gave, you know, a hoot about the data that was on that stuff, well, that, you know, that remains to be seen. Probably not. But let's just say that that breach did result in people having their identity stolen. Well, because of the limited magnitude of the breach, where it really only affected people in, say, a 3-county region in the United States, well, then the FTC, you know, and the FBI, et cetera, you know, HHS, they don't get involved. They don't care about such tiny little things. They're never going to find out about it. And what lawyer actually cares about putting together a class action lawsuit? Well, so nobody does anything about it. And then the story gets around, and then other providers say, well, you know, nothing happened to them. So, you know, we don't need to have offsite backups. You know, we don't need to have encrypted backups. We don't need to have physical security for our server. And, you know, our practice management database really doesn't need to be encrypted. So then what they do is they look at HIPAA regulations and think they're just a joke. And frankly, I see the same thing in the whole PCI space, too. It's, you know, there are some places that are doing PCI correctly, but they're not the majority. And that is not, I would say, in most cases, that's not the fault of the small provider. That's actually the fault of the payment card system, the point of sale payment card system provider. And boy, that's a whole nother show. So with regards to the Petya ransomware, there's actually a decryptor out now. So if you know of somebody who got Petya ransomware, there is a decryptor that you can download and decrypt the files. Now, as part of ransomware, you need to be having offline backups, or at least backups that are reasonably able to be mitigated from ransomware as much as possible. And the last podcast was on that. So if you have more interest in that, go check it out. Office 2016 has macro protection in it when configured by policy, which means it's not on by default, and that can stop a lot of ransomware, and I'm going to publish a link to that. So if you have an Office 16 environment, or if you have Office 365, which then you can download and install Office 2016, then you can turn that policy on in Active Directory and get some additional protection in place. Now, if you have Office 365, you can also get full sandboxing and advanced persistent threat blocking for not only your Exchange Online, but SharePoint and OneDrive if you get a product called Trend Micro Cloud App Security, which I personally use. I think it's a fantastic product. And I find that for a lot of organizations that have like E1 or E3 licensing, but they don't really need E5, then it makes all the sense in the world to get Cloud App Security. And if you have any interest in that product, by all means, do let me know. Call, email, etc. And now, if, though, let's say you're an organization that has in excess of 100 endpoints, you might want to look at instead getting Trend's Smart Protection Complete, because that's a product that will allow you to do DLP and mobile device management, as well as having Cloud App Security and full endpoint protection. So, and it gives it all to you in one centralized management interface that has SIM logging. So it's pretty slick stuff. It's quite cost effective once you get over 100 endpoints. And it can look, well, it can look expensive. I think it's like $58 a year per endpoint, which really is not astronomical at all. So you look at your typical consumer grade internet security product and they want $60 a year. So even for a small business of 15 people, you might want that. It's just you actually have to have somebody who can competently implement that for you. That's not going to be like some sort of home user implementation, right? So there is a product that Microsoft came out that came out with that's called Cloud App Security as well, and that really should not be confused with Trend's Cloud App Security product. Now, Microsoft's Cloud App Security product is literally, it's more intuitive to its name. It's literally about apps that go on your mobile devices. And they have this database of in excess of like 13,000 applications. And with the Microsoft Cloud App Security, by the way, it's not sandboxing and APT blocking, so it doesn't do the same things that Trend's product does. So Microsoft's product is really about managing those mobile devices and the apps that are on them. So if that's something that you need, you might want to take a look at that product. And I think that might be part of the E5 licensing now. So if you have an interest in that, you know, let me know. Those are definitely projects I can help you with. And let's talk a little bit about application control, because there's a recent Ars Technica article talking about how 94% of Tor traffic is categorized as malicious. Okay, so let's say you've got a network to manage. How do you keep people from using Tor? And of course, Tor is going to go over port 80 or 443, depends. Well, you can't block 80 and 443, but what you can do is proxy it and inspect it. And when you are literally inspecting those packets, you now have the ability to do application control. And in that application control, you can see, oh, it's Tor traffic. All right, so block that. So for those of you that have perimeter security appliances, you should have application control capabilities. Why don't you just revisit your application control policies and take a look and see about disabling Tor in your application control policies, because if the statistics are showing, by the way, these statistics came from Cloudflare, and, well, they would know, because that's what they do for a living. And I'm really just not interested in allowing Tor traffic on my network if 94% of that traffic is categorized as malicious across the world. You know? So my last tidbit has to do with Windows 10 and UEFI boot. So we talked on some previous shows about when you upgrade to Windows 10, you may have actually been starting with a system that had BIOS boot, and how in order to use Secure Boot, which is definitely optimized, and in order to avoid the malicious attacks that are associated with the corruption of your master boot record, then you needed to actually go to a UEFI boot methodology. Well, there is now a very well-written TechNet article that talks about the specific process for you to follow in order to take your upgraded Windows 10 computer that has all the goodies on it, meaning here's your apps and your configuration and your data and so forth, and you don't really want to rebuild that computer from scratch. Okay, so how do you take it where it's getting converted from MBR boot method, so master boot record boot, to UEFI boot? Well, historically, there wasn't a real well-documented procedure, so you were really taking a lot of risk trying to do this adjustment on your own. And even now, it's a very technically demanding process, but at least it's a well-documented process now. So I would say, if you have an interest in switching your Windows 10 computer that's still doing BIOS boot to UEFI boot, then you can try this procedure, and I will publish that article for you. Because if you can get onto UEFI boot, well, then you can take advantage of secure boot and even boot mode encryption protection with BitLocker, assuming you have the Trusted Platform module. So that is it for today's show.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Texas Roadhouse of Racine, Special Olympics Wisconsin, and local law enforcement host the Guardians of the